This is CNT Talk. Every week, two friends debate the issues of the ages as we agree to disagree. It's never politically correct, but it's always entertaining. Join us tonight so you can sound knowledgeable at work tomorrow. We're smacking you upside the head with the hammer of truth. Welcome to the show. Hello, hello. Take two. The first take didn't go. I forgot to turn the board on.
Who is running this program?
Obviously, it's not you because it would have been done right the first time.
Yes, absolutely.
So I got the board on now, so we're good. Thankfully, we didn't get too far in. I want to play a voicemail. Take this back. I got a text, which I converted to a voicemail for an audio podcast. The text doesn't really work, so I thought I'd put an
audio. Wait, so you made some like computer voice?
It's a computer voice.
Okay.
Talking about us. And I always like to share when listeners say positive things about us. So here you go.
I just wanted to leave you a message and let you know that I just finished listening to CNT Talk again and it was fantastic. You guys just keep getting better and better. I'm to the point where I really look forward to getting my next installment. Keep up the great work, brother.
So that was a real text.
That was from Q? Who was that from, Chad?
Everything sounds better with a British accent,
doesn't
it?
Yes, I know. That sounded excellent. So that,
my wife said, you got to preface what that is before they're going to go, what the heck is that? It's not a real person. That was computer-generated voice. But it was a British accent named Daniel. So Daniel read that voicemail. So we're reaching some people. That's all
true.
I can say. Some people like us.
One at a time.
One at a time.
The revolution.
We might get a handful here before we're too far along. So what happened this week? Last week we talked about Christian politics, okay? And I finished the last seminar. You weren't able to make it to the last seminar. And we got some feedback from people I've talked to this week who heard that and really interested in the topic, thought it was quite interesting. I listened to the last of Dr. Fia's discussion. If you've read his blog, and I have recently, he is not a Trump fan. That's very obvious in everything he writes. He didn't give me the conclusion I was looking for, which was, what should I do? And I think the topic was mistitled. I think Christian politics was an attempt to grab people's attention, but the whole discussion really wasn't about Christian politics. Christian, and maybe what Christians should do in face of secular politics, but not Christian politics. Maybe that's splitting hairs, but it didn't feel like that to me.
Well, in fairness to him, though, he said from the outset that the way that he's defining politics is not – he's not having people show up so that he can give them a roadmap for
– correct.
Here's who you should vote for. Correct. And here's the issue that most Christians must support or must not support. That's not really what he's about. Again, his definition of politics was more about essentially a Christian's interaction with, you know, civic government – in your role as an active and engaged and attentive citizen, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how your faith can then somehow be used to sort of establish a set of principles, a set of Christian principles consistent with Christian theology, mm-hmm. that allows you to at least engage with these kind of issues and think about them. So I don't think it was – I mean, sure. When people hear politics, that has a certain connotation.
Well, I think that's what they're playing on.
They expect to hear the red meat about, yes, you know, only Republicans can be voted for if you're –
no, not at all.
So it didn't surprise me at all. And having heard him speak before –
this is my first time. So
on the topic of, you know, was America a Christian nation? He's really not interested in telling people, this is my, these are the ways that you must think about the world as a Christian, and which means that this is how you have to vote.
Right.
It's more, he's presenting things from a historical perspective, and I think a scholarly and rigorous historical perspective. I said before, I'm sure that he and I would probably have both, partisan political disagreements, or at least ideological disagreements, and also philosophical disagreements. But I appreciate the fact that he's not really stacking the deck one way or another. He's presenting a framework of how he thinks a Christian, based on the Bible, based on you know, Christ's teachings, based on our understanding of where we fit in an eternal kingdom, not just a very temporary, evanescent kingdom here on earth, and what are the principles that should be guiding those decisions? So I don't think it was false advertising. I just don't think he ever intended for that.
I think the title gives you an implication of what the topic is going to be, and it's not when you get there. Now, you put up front, this is not what it is. So you didn't have to come the other 3 weeks.
You said before we kind of went on here, and again, I did miss it, that you felt like he sort of showed his – it was his tell that he
– Well, if you've not read his blog and you only went to these seminars, you might really not know exactly where he falls on things. His blog is patently anti-Trump. It's clear – I mean, he doesn't say it. This is not my style, so understand what I'm saying this. He presents other people's words to tell his point without using his own words. He really uses other people's quotes and articles, and that's fine. That's probably a more of a academic presentation. If I halt these famous people, you're going to believe them before you believe me. Got it. Yesterday he said – now he's pro-life, which is good. I would agree with that. But he said – you shouldn't vote for somebody who's wholly unqualified to be president simply because they're pro-life. Because in fact, and somebody commented on this, in fact, Republicans tend to diminish the other things that go with pro-life, like his education for new mothers, adoption, other things that talk about that. He believes there's less money put towards those. And if we spent more money on those instead of fighting, you know, the abortion thing or pro-choice, we'd be much further along as a country. And he believes that most conservatives are not willing to compromise on the abortion thing, whereas we could get some compromise, have less abortions, and be happy. Now, my feeling on that completely is, no, I'm not willing to compromise on that because any child that's killed that shouldn't be killed shouldn't be killed. I can't compromise and say, well, we got less killed this year because we did something better. I want all or none, and he doesn't believe in all or none. He believes in shades of gray, which that's fine.
I wasn't there to hear what he said.
Agreed.
It sounds like he's making the argument that, you know, don't make the perfect the enemy of the good. That sort of notion that we're never going to completely, as a political exercise, eradicate abortion. So therefore, we have to work within those margins and do other things. I've heard this argument before. I mean, going back
that to is just, his argument, actually.
Right.
Yes.
But going back to, and I don't necessarily agree with that, because I don't think those things are mutually exclusive.
Agree.
I mean, for instance, I've always said, personally, I find, as a Christian, abortion to be an abomination. However, from a political perspective, I would be more than content to have the Supreme Court, which is never going to happen, because Roe v. Wade has been the law for so long that the stare decisis, right? What that means is the precedential value of that decision has become so embedded, and plus the sort of social disruption it would cause, which, by the way, I don't think is a legitimate consideration for the court, but nevertheless, judges are human beings and they think about these things. If Roe was overturned, I think that would be, in my view, a very satisfactory state of affairs, because that would simply return us to a pre-Roe existence, which, by the way, most people who don't – the media perpetuates this – think that abortion was illegal. It was not. Abortion was decided by the people of the individual states, and there were probably –
and that's what he said it would go back to.
Right. There's probably – I can't remember the exact number, but there's, let's say, 26 or 28 or maybe even 30 states where it was illegal, and the remainder it was legal. And so, in my view, the advantage of that system is that it is democratic, meaning the people, through their elected representatives in each state, have decided that question. I might actually be living in a state that would decide it in a way that I disagree with, but I much prefer that state of affairs than nine people in robes declaring that there is some imaginary right that they somehow located in the penumbras of the Constitution. But the other thing that you said, which interested me, is that I think he said something about you shouldn't vote for abortion, or it shouldn't outweigh someone who is wholly unqualified. Well, that kind of begs the question.
Mm-hmm.
Who's defining what the qualifications are?
Well,
I think that Professor Fia would say, from a historical perspective, there are many things about Trump that render him unqualified or unfit for the office. However, this gets back to my argument. I could make a very compelling case that Hillary Clinton, in many ways, was equally, if not more, disqualified from serving. And he would probably disagree with that. But the focus on this notion that Trump is historically abnormal, in my view, is almost all predicated on – we've talked about this – on his behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to ask Professor Fia right now, after we've had a year's worth of the Trump Reich or the Trump presidency.
Okay, Trump Reich.
He wouldn't say that. He wouldn't use that kind of language. But I would say – If you look at the policies that he has pursued, in what way, in what historical context would you be able to say that this is some sort of completely bizarro world, aberration, never seen before presidency? Because that simply wouldn't be true.
I think he's looking more at the man, which we've talked about, and not the policies. He's saying the policies don't outweigh the failings of the man. And they are numerous, as we all are. His are just more public, probably, than money. I think that's what he would say, because this man is wholly unqualified to hold a secular office. Let's remind people, this is a secular office. This is not a, he's not king of heaven. Yeah. This is the president of the United States.
And see, again, and I think that, though, demonstrates certain biases. We all have them, or certain traits that someone who is an academic and a historian would want to have in a president.
Sure.
But I don't necessarily agree with that.
That person, for instance, doesn't exist, but okay.
They look at Barack Obama and say, oh, well, he's at least, from a character standpoint, more qualified. Really? Now, he certainly was more well-spoken. He certainly was, at least on the surface, less narcissistic, although I've had arguments with my friends that I think Barack Obama is among the most egocentric, narcissistic people who's ever served in the presidency.
Completely.
Now, that doesn't necessarily come across from his public statements, because those were carefully parsed, and he is very articulate.
When he spoke off the teleprompter, it was very clear.
But his entire perception of himself is invincible self-regard.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear this among the sycophants around him. He's the smartest man I've ever met. And the famous quote, I think that I'm better at, you know, policy than my policy directors, and I'm better at every substantive issue than anyone who advises me. Incredibly egocentric person. We can have an argument whether Trump is more so, but what most people fixate on about Trump is, well, look at his tweets and look at his braggadocious statements. Yes, he is a much more, he's not a calculating speaker. He's volatile.
Mm-hmm.
He's petty.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things. But I don't think he is uniquely unqualified to be president. It depends on what standards we're applying.
Well, if we look at government service as a qualification, then Hillary was by far the most qualified. I'm including the independent people as well. So there were, what, five or six people total actually running on the ticket in November. So if you lose that, she had the most qualifications from a public standpoint. But I agree with you. I don't think she's any more qualified for the role of president than Trump was. So if you eliminate Trump, you eliminate Hillary, because neither one of them was, as a human being, not great in this definition that we're looking at, and the other ones were wholly unqualified for public service at this level, what you're saying is you can't vote for president. So if all the evangelicals say, I can't vote for president because none of them epitomize what we should be doing, now we don't vote for president, now we're leaving it up to another portion of the people to make that decision, and then we're stuck with something that could be far worse, possibly.
Well, and
it could be better, I don't know.
It gets back to this pet peeve that I have, is the character issues are addressed when the American people go to the polls.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that everything that is represented by Donald Trump, good, bad, evil, the Kaiser, whatever else you want to call him, Orange Hitler, all of his, if you want to label it misogyny, all of his lack of curiosity, his lack of any sort of intellectual foundation for much of what he thinks, his just public persona where he's crude and vulgar and says things that are outrageous, that's baked into the cake. So to me, once he is now president, that doesn't mean that you don't continue to identify those things when he does them and you point them out, but to say, well, these policies now that he is implementing are somehow illegitimate because he's a bad guy. Well, we know that you think he's a bad guy, and the public decided that that wasn't sufficient to remove him from the presidency. He is the president.
Mm-hmm.
So now to continually refer back to, well, don't you remember the Billy Bush tape? In evaluating his tax cut, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Evaluate the policy on its merits, and that's what I get back to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can now say, after a year of him being president, well, he's still uniquely unqualified. Well, wait a minute. He is governed as a right-of-center Republican, and he's actually, based on much of what he said he was going to do, been fairly successful in terms of his domestic policy, in terms of his judicial appointments, in terms of the nation's relationship with Israel, in terms of his foreign policy. Now, there's a lot of people that hate his priorities.
Sure, sure.
But I think you'd have to make the argument that somehow his entire presidency has been this monumental train wreck. That is simply not reality.
Do you believe you can support what he's done without supporting him?
Yes,
can you
absolutely
separate those two?
Because that, again, that's the non sequitur that they're constant. Are you ready now to disavow Satan? It's like, well, wait a minute. What are you talking about? Because he sent another tweet that you don't like? Fine. That was an inflammatory tweet. It was ill-advised. It was vulgar. Whatever. Let's talk about, do I therefore disagree with and oppose his rolling back of the administrative state? Absolutely not. Yeah. I think that's a very, very good thing that he's doing. We should be able to have these sort of separate conversations, but it's almost as if people want you to declare that's it. Mm-hmm. He is tainted. He is persona non grata, and therefore anything that he does is inherently illegitimate. I simply refuse to accept that viewpoint.
And I agree with you, but I think we would both disagree with Dr. Fia, who feels that if you're an evangelical and you're supporting Donald Trump, you can't be supporting for the policies because of there's all these other things he says and does. And those things should be condemned and should be brought to light. You cannot act this way. You cannot talk this way. You cannot behave this way. But it doesn't change the policies. It doesn't change the actions that he's doing for the country. And I think I don't want to say this, but Pollyanna a little bit saying, well, I only want the good stuff. And I can't – if he's bad, I just can't look at that stuff. And I don't believe that because you're the measure of your actions and your words. Okay? I believe actions a whole lot more than I believe words, especially from politicians. That doesn't mean they don't speak the truth sometimes, but I think it's few and far between in most words. That includes Republicans. But I think their actions speak, and Trump's actions as a private citizen have not been awesome. His actions as a president have always been awesome. But the things he's accomplished and his administration has accomplished, for the most part, I can stand behind because I believe that's where I want it to go. And Dr. Fee would say that's the playbook that's outdated, doesn't work, can't use. But I don't agree with that.
Yeah, and neither do I. And here's a more concrete example of this. If you're going to tell me that I should be evaluating Donald Trump almost exclusively on his boorish and bizarre sometimes and petulant and juvenile behavior and his coarseness and all of these things that we've identified, okay, and that is somehow superseding from a Christian perspective, his policies, my argument would be, let's take something that Barack Obama has done. Let's take, for instance, Barack Obama's policy on Iran. Now, Barack Obama can present and articulate those policies in the most statesmanlike and glib and facile manner. And am I supposed to disregard the fact that as a Christian, what he is implementing in terms of notions of justice, righteousness, the dignity of human life. Okay, we're funding people. We are partnering with people who murder, who are engaged. They are the largest global terror sponsor in the world. As a Christian who values life, who values God's creation, I would absolutely make the argument that if I'm going to put on the scales of this these theological considerations, Donald Trump, crude jerk, but his policy as it relates to Iran is let's be aggressively opposed to a regime that murders and tortures and butchers around the world, or should I favor Barack Obama because he can give a good teleprompted speech and has a jutting jaw and a creased pant leg, pace David Brooks, but his policies are anathema to anyone that cares about, again, human life, even though Barack Obama would present this as some great humanitarian endeavor. I would come down on the side of, absolutely, I would prefer Donald Trump because the policy that he favors is far more important than the way that he talks and tweets.
That's fair. I agree with everything that Dr. Fia spoke over the last 4 weeks about what the Christian reaction should be on a community grassroots level. We should be putting education towards Planned Parenthood, not calling it Planned Parenthood, but Parenthood for young mothers or teenage mothers. We should be talking about adoption. We should be trying to educate these people that abortion is not the right answer, or whatever topic you want to come up with. We should be doing that. In addition, in my mind, to trying to elect officials who will promulgate those same thoughts, not just one or the other. I think it should be both. And I'm not out there protesting abortion clinics. I've never done that. I will not stand in front of an abortion clinic and throw rocks and hate speech. That's not who I am and never going to be. And I don't think that's you either.
No, the whole notion of making a placard is sort of incomprehensible to me.
I do not have poster paints. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But all that stuff being said, I feel we need to do both. And if you dismiss one for the other, I think you're missing half the equation. And it's easy to sit there and go, well, you know, we currently worry about that. It's God's place. And it is. I believe God allowed Donald Trump to be elected. Whether that was his choice or not doesn't matter. He allowed Donald Trump to be elected. Whether we deserve Donald Trump or not deserve Donald Trump, that's who we have. And we get what we deserve in all cases, and this is what we deserve.
Yeah,
good or bad.
Well, and the other thing I should probably say is, I want to make this clear, I'm not saying that a Christian can't come down on the other side of this, meaning there are legitimate polls of opinion on this. So a Christian evaluating Donald Trump can absolutely, within the framework of how does a Christian who takes his or her faith seriously evaluate the political realm and evaluate who they vote for. Of course a Christian could come out like Dr. Fia does and say, you know what, I'm sorry, these character flaws make it impossible for me. By the way, that's what I did.
Yeah.
Okay? I didn't vote for him for that very reason. But see, we're beyond the voting.
Right.
Right. We're beyond the voting. We are now evaluating an existing presidency. So I would say I'm not suggesting that there is some appropriate way that a Christian should think about this. What I am rejecting, and I'm not sure if this is position, but if it is that somehow Donald Trump represents the frontier upon, you know, which we cannot, it's the Rubicon. We cannot cross that Rubicon. He is beyond the pale. I don't agree with that. From a Christian perspective, I don't think Donald Trump presents some uniquely disqualifying characteristics such that a Christian cannot, consistent with their faith, say, no, I still think he is the appropriate choice given what we are confronted with when we are electing a secular leader for this country.
I think if you knew more about most of our presidents, you wouldn't have elected them either, based on those same criteria, because they were not fine, upstanding citizens. And I don't know if such a person has ever existed in the presidency in this country, or, as Dr. Fia would say, our founding fathers. I don't believe they were mostly Christian. I think there were some, but they were mostly deists or,
right,
you know, lapsed whatevers. They weren't, it was not a Christian nation in that sense. It was more Christian maybe than it is today, but that's a relative term as to what that means. But Warren G. Harding was not a good guy. He was a womanizer. JFK, not a real particularly good husband, model. Probably not a model you want to emulate, or RFK for that matter.
This comes as a surprise
but
to me.
You hear all these people, but things weren't known. I mean, you know, FDR was not a great model husband. So we've got moral failings throughout history with all of these people. Maybe it's more because Trump's on Twitter, you know, and blasting away daily. That's probably part of it. His history is public and has been public for decades, where some of these people were unknown, and that's how they got elected. Look at Barack Obama standing with Farrakhan in 2007. Obviously, that would have been a problem for a lot of people to vote for him, saying, oh, you're friends with the Nation of Islam. Maybe I don't want to vote for you. Wonder why I was buried for all these years. All those things. None of these people are moral paragons as we put them up. Whether you put them up as president, I'll include Ronald Reagan. He was divorced. His wife had some stories about Nancy Reagan when she was younger. I don't know. But these people weren't what we hold up as Christian figures, even if later on they became Christian. I don't know what that means, but we have to get past it. And maybe it's just because there's so much more out there now to look at that you assume this is the start of the end. And maybe it is. I don't know.
Yeah. I think one other thing I wanted to say about this in sort of a different context is, I don't know if you heard, I mentioned this to some friends who are in a life group with us through our church, but I had seen an interview that Jerry Falwell Jr., okay, mm-hmm. Jerry Falwell, son of Jerry Falwell.
Senior.
Yeah, senior. Founder of Liberty
Playbook.
University, very, very prominent mm-hmm. evangelical. Mm-hmm. And he was on, I don't know what network he was on, but he was basically being grilled about the whole stuff about Stormy Daniels. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't heard about this, go read about it. It's more character issues with Donald Trump
yep.
and whether he was unfaithful to his wife. And it's all very sordid. And if it did go on, it's yet another demonstration of his poor character. But the thing that I found just depressing and infuriating is Jerry Falwell Jr. in defending this behavior. This is what he said. The first thing that he said was, "Judge not, lest ye be judged."
Yeah.
Now, please tell me, Chad, how many things. See, the reason that this infuriates me is because this is the kind of thing that.
You're right.
Christians deserve it. He is representing evangelical Christians.
He is.
And when he makes, and I'm sorry, an asinine, completely theologically backwards statement like that, that is what people should point to and say,
yes.
You are perverting the scripture to support behavior that, and apparently a person that you believe you have a reason to support. You are. It's a disgrace what he said. Now,
he
on
and others,
multiple levels.
He and others have done the same
what,
thing.
By the way, Chad, what is wrong with saying in response to someone that says Donald Trump is credibly accused of having an affair with a porn star or whatever else, and the response is, judge not, lest ye be judged.
It's hypocritical to start with, because if it had been Barack Obama in the same situation, Jerry Falwell Jr. would have been blasting from the
That's
sidelines.
True. Yes, that's true.
That's crazy.
True.
But it's
From a theological and a scriptural basis, however, God has judged.
Yes.
Are you saying, Jerry, that as a Christian, we are not going to speak the truth about what people are doing and whether that is consistent with Christ's teaching about how we are to live? Is that what you are really saying?
I can't believe
Jerry Jr.
I can't believe he said that, and I can't believe other people have said similar things in response to similar questions.
This is
unfair.
This is what atheists and progressives say to mm-hmm. Christians mm-hmm. because they live in a moral relativistic world
right.
and say, we can't make judgments about anything. And as Christians, our response has to be, of course we can.
Mm-hmm.
It's not our judgment. It's God's judgment.
Yep.
And we know what God thinks because we have a book and yep. he wrote it all down.
Yep.
Now,
just read it.
Are we to judge in a morally superior
no.
way?
No.
In a scornful way? In
no.
In a way that says, like the Pharisees, we are better because we don't do these things. No, because we have all sinned. But this absurdity for him to say, don't even bother judging the behavior because lest you be judged
no.
is so awful.
It is.
And I would hope that there are Christians who are affiliated with Liberty who are emailing him and saying, you need to seriously reconsider mm-hmm. the doctrinal basis for what you are saying, because you are doing no favors whatsoever to the evangelical, not the movement, but to Christianity writ large. That is what Bill Maher would say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
You're
so,
100% correct.
It is so bad.
You're 100%
And so that's
correct.
The kind of stuff that drives me crazy, because that is a guy
yeah.
who is, he is speaking, I have to know, well, I don't know whether he was just being disingenuous and he was finding some pretext. I actually hope he was, because if he actually believes that that is a sound Christian response to that, what he should have said was, absolutely, that behavior, if it did occur, is sinful, and Donald Trump should be asking for forgiveness
mm-hmm.
because it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus makes it very clear that that is something that should never go on. Lack of fidelity to your wife on multiple levels. I would never, as a Christian, defend that behavior. He needs, by the way, the other thing is this sort of cheap grace that we get. Before you get grace, Chad, what has to happen?
You have to ask for forgiveness.
You have to repent, right? Has Donald yeah. Trump ever repented
Not
to your
publicly.
Knowledge of this?
Not publicly.
Now, again, if he has privately, that's
and
fine.
And again, I would say he doesn't have to. I don't feel he has to repent publicly, but he has to repent to God. He has to ask God for forgiveness, not me. It's not me.
Right.
He has to forgiveness
from
his wife.
We're not only flipping scripture on its head to say we can't make moral judgments based on how Christ has taught us to live. But also, we're going to dispense all sorts of grace to someone that's never even repented of what they have done.
That's
maddening to me.
It's where I have a little... I can't say I have less respect for Mike Pence. I have some concerns and some issues with Mike Pence as his running mate and standing up next to this guy. And he said some things recently that seem supportive of Donald Trump that I think from a moral standpoint, I don't think Mike Pence should be making. And I feel like, Mike, every time you stand up for this guy and say he's a morally fibrous, he's the most pro-life president we've ever had. Maybe you should just step back from that. I know you're trying to push a political agenda. Don't say stuff like that because you don't know that. Is he the most pro-life? He came into the conference.
In defense of
that's
Pence.
That's the first one in a long time.
In defense of Pence. And by the way, you want to talk about a difficult straddle.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, as a vice president who, of course, part of your job description is, you know, you are supporting the president. Now, I don't really have a problem, even if it's, we can quibble over whether it's accurate, for Mike Pence to say in his policies... He is the most pro-life president. I don't know whether I agree with that. In fact, I don't think that I do.
I don't think I do, but maybe
if you're going to make sort of an objective empirical statement that says, given these things that Donald Trump has done, given the fact that he spoke at the pro-life march, no one else has done that, given what he's attempting to do with Planned Parenthood, that I'm going to make the argument that he's the most pro-life in his actual policies, I don't necessarily have a problem with that.
Yeah.
If you veer into sort of vouching for his character...
It feels like he's vouching for the character, and I don't like that because I don't know that I agree with that. I like Mike Pence. Donald Trump, I'm not here to judge you, but God is, and we're going to call what you do wrong when it's wrong. You know, I'm not standing on my high horse saying I'm better than you. That's not the case. But what you do is wrong when it's wrong. And I think maybe that's some of the issue, that... There are enough evangelicals out there, Christians, who are saying, giving him, I won't say a pass, but they're not coming down as harshly as they would have if it was Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. They would have been much harsher in their judgment of him as they were with Bill Clinton, you know. Focus on the Family came
right
out about Bill Clinton in the 90s condemning his actions, less so Dobson,
yeah.
James Dobson, less so on Trump. It seems like there's, because you like some of the policies, you're willing to overlook some of the bad. And that's what Dr. Fee is saying. And if you read his blog, that's what he has come across. These evangelicals who are constantly trying to make excuses for Donald Trump's behavior and his actions when they didn't for others. And nor should they have for others. I'm not saying
right.
They should have for Bill Clinton. They shouldn't also for Donald Trump. And I agree with that. So I will agree with Dr. Fee on that. So let's move on. We talked a lot. That was just kind of be a wrap up, but we had a lot to go there. This week we had some interesting discussions about the tax cuts, and I want to play a quick clip from New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Look at the bill. They started by saying that they were going to do a cut for the middle class, the working men and women. It was a bait and switch. It has nothing to do with
bait
the working
and
men and women. The theory was we'll give a tax cut to the rich and to the big corporations, and we hope the corporations will pass it on in terms of higher wages.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they might, or they may dividend it out. They may put it in their pocket, or they may buy a house in the south of France. If you actually wanted to help the workers, you would have stipulated in the law, we'll give corporations a tax cut, but... 50% of it has to go to higher wages. The way they financed it was by raiding the blue states. Why? Because the Senate doesn't have any senators from the blue states. So they came up with
a
very convenient rationale. We'll raise money from the blue states and we'll give it to the red states. So New York, a blue state, California, a blue state, Jersey, a blue state, they are paying a penalty. We lost the deductibility of our state and local taxes. First double taxation in the history of the nation.
There it is. Let's break that apart.
Wow, there is so much tremendous
Minute 12, and
there.
There's so much to talk about. So some of these states, California, New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts, I believe, are planning to sue the federal government because this is an unconstitutional tax cut. You ever heard that before?
No.
Tax cut being unconstitutional. I believe the Congress has the right to set tax bills. The president signs them And that's the law.
I wonder if there's unconstitutional spending, Chad.
Apparently. Well, yeah, 50% of the tax didn't go to...
I don't think I would have ever...
No.
You never hear a progressive say...
Never, ever.
That spending allocation is unconstitutional.
Yeah, so did you like the line about there's no senators
Explain
from the blue states?
Me. Wait a minute. Huh. So California doesn't have any senators?
Apparently
New York
not.
Doesn't have any senators?
Dianne Feinstein, I think she's still a senator.
I think so, yeah.
He can't count... What he probably meant to say was nobody who voted for the bill... Because when he said this, it was a bill, it wasn't signed in law. Nobody voted for the bill was from a blue state. And that may be true.
Yeah.
But there are senators there.
That's kind of how it works, Gov.
Yes, that's how it always has worked. I'm not sure you understand that. And he wanted to put into the law 50% had to go into higher wages. What? It's a tax cut. It's a tax cut. You get the tax cut, you don't tell me I have to give more to my...
You can't remove the mini totalitarian from this guy. I mean, it's everything. Oh, fine. If you're gonna give them, you know, money back, we're gonna tell you how it has to be spent.
Right.
He doesn't in his economic illiteracy, he doesn't appreciate that if you're gonna dictate that, they're not gonna do it.
Right.
Because they have other things that they're they can fly to France. But here's the best part. The reveal is what he is angry about, and mm-hmm. this is so Schadenfreude. This is the best. So for years, the blue state model has been we are gonna have these exorbitant taxes, and we're going to tout all of our bona fides about, oh, we're all about tolerance and equality. Well, what are the states that have the most? Remember, the boogeyman is income inequality, right?
Yep.
It's terrible that people are getting richer and the gap between them and the poorer is growing. Now, in my view, what we should be focused on is poverty, meaning we want to lift everybody. I don't really care whether Bill Gates has $50 billion. What I care about is if everyone else's income goes up, why do you care that Bill Gates is making more? You shouldn't.
Still got more than
me. It's envy. But what the blue state model has done is because they were allowed to deduct all of these massive taxes, mm-hmm. they could get away with hiding the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're going to keep raising taxes, but it's this shell game. We have this special subsidy that you can write it off. Well, guess what? Now they get to bear the burden of, hey, how do you like the high tax utopia? By the way, Governor, I thought it was everyone's patriotic delight. They should be celebrating mm-hmm. all of these people like Warren Buffett. Oh, it's so terrible. I want to pay more in taxes.
Then do it.
Guess what?
You could do that.
We've just done it for you. You don't get to take one of those.
So you don't believe that the government with this tax plan has raided the blue states,
yes.
raided them, taken their money from them, and not allowed
right.
to double taxation.
Well, that's the other thing is, again, it's always the collective's money.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you hear them talk this way. I mean, they literally will talk about, you know, they're stealing. Who are they stealing from? Yes. Well, they're stealing from Big Brother. It's Big Brother's money. No, it's actually the people's money, Governor.
Yeah.
So, yes,
yeah.
they are. This is now, it's going to be put up or shut up time. You guys have touted your model of governance, which is more spending and more taxes for more glorious stuff, more mm-hmm. entitlements and more alleged infrastructure and whatever, more pre-K social justice knowledge, whatever else it is. Well, now, guess what? You can now get the full price tag for all of this wonderfulness. And so, oddly enough,
they're not happy.
People don't seem as happy about
it
anymore.
He says double taxation. What he meant to say, because he doesn't understand economics, you cannot deduct all that money. You're still going to get to deduct some, just not all. That's not double taxation.
$10,000. You can still deduct up to $10,000.
It's taxed once, which is the state taking it from you. You
yes.
just can't deduct $18,000 from your federal taxes because you paid it to the state. That's not double taxation. Double taxation is stocks. Look into that one. Now, California this week, Governor Jerry Brown put through a policy, and I think it's going to become law. They're debating it right now in their House and Senate, that taxes in California will be considered a charitable deduction.
Right, they're trying that game.
That will allow you to deduct the entire amount.
Yeah, don't
now, you
so.
Have to pay it. So it's forced confiscation of your money, but you're going to call it a charitable
yeah.
deduction.
Good luck with that. Good luck with
they
that.
They think they found the loophole.
With Neil Gorsuch. That might have worked if Oprah had been nominated for the
wow.
court when Hillary was president
wow.
in an alternative universe. No, so this is – I mean, you want to talk about hoisted on your petard. This, again, The governor should be absolutely dancing a jig of delight
yes.
that this is now the policy.
Should
because
be.
All the wealthy progressives that tout how there is nothing more patriotic and America first than paying confiscatory taxes, they
Bring
now
it.
Get to do it full bore.
Bring it on.
And shockingly, they don't really like this.
No, they don't. When you can hide it, it's not so bad. When you got to see the full brunt.
It's almost as if their public pose is all a lie.
Wow. We'll get to the lies in a second. So changing topics just a little bit, the White House put out their immigration plan-ish, sort of, kind of. And there's been reactions for obvious reasons. I have a clip here from Cory Booker that just
no.
Yeah.
You're going to really torture us with Cory Booker.
Well,
I need to be informed before we have the audio.
The title of the show is Cry Me a River, Cory Booker. So
I got to
have
see,
a Cory Booker.
What the title is.
Let's see here. Here we go.
Well, again, most of us would take that if it stood alone, that we have a pathway to citizenship.
If it stood alone.
Folks who are American citizens in every
yep.
single way, except for a piece of paper. They've served in our military. They pledged allegiance
they're
to
citizens
our flag.
Except for that piece
they've
of paper.
They've taught in our schools. They're entrepreneurs. They're creating jobs. And so what is offensive about the president's proposal is he wants to put tens of billions of dollars at a time that our country is screaming for infrastructure investment that many of the best experts on Homeland Security do not believe we need. This is like money for 19th century technology at a time that we could use 21st century technology less expensive to protect
sure.
our borders.
Sure. Let's do
There's
that.
Not a senator in Congress that doesn't want secure borders.
So
the way this president is going about it seems to be more about a campaign promise and campaign rhetoric than what's best to secure this country. And to use dreamers, again, fellow Americans in every
so
way,
but
a piece of paper.
So would you accept this bill if we're only $10 billion for the wall?
I just want to finish my sentence. To use them as a political pawn right now is, to me, reprehensible. When everyone knows these kids right now are suffering, they're in severe anxiety that's mm-hmm. upending their education and mm-hmm. their work. And so I don't want to back myself into it.
I don't want
to
answer your question.
But I know this current proposal and the idea of billions of dollars for a wall is unacceptable to me.
Okay, so fellow Americans.
He is, what a cartoon he is.
They are illegally here, and he calls them fellow Americans.
Right. But here's again, though. So he says, this is all projection, right? When people like Cory Booker talk, what he's doing is everything that he says that he's claiming other people are doing is what he wants to do.
I want you to feel my pain! Feel my pain!
Yeah, of course, and his pain is completely fake. I mean, there is no pain. But interestingly, let's be clear on what Donald Trump has proposed, because his proposal has angered many conservatives.
Agreed.
Donald Trump's current proposal is essentially, I will expand from DACA, which is probably a universe of about 800,000 people, to include the Dreamers, which is now 2 million people. And,
or more.
And his proposal, which is something that Barack Obama actually didn't propose, is that they will have a pathway to full citizenship in about uh-huh. a decade. Not just continuing work permits, but you are now a citizen. Now, here's what is fascinating, Chad. Cory Booker and all of his demagoguery about what is despicable and using him as pawns, he's now been presented with a proposal that says you will get 2 million of these crying children, because guess what?
Anxiety.
They're not all children.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the other sort of dirty little secret here, is that many of them, they didn't come here as children, because DACA runs up to that you could have been in your late teens, mm-hmm. and then it's not capped either.
Mm-hmm.
You claim that you are heartbroken and twitching in your sleep over the plight of all of these poor undocumented fellow Americans. Donald Trump has said on a platter, you can now get 2 million, basically the Dreamers and all the people under DACA, into the country on a path to full citizenship, which you claim, Mr. Booker, is your heart's desire because of your compassion for your fellow man. And the interviewer, by the way, who's a friendly interviewer, says, well, okay, well, would you take 10? And he says, you know, could you let me finish with my propaganda, and then I won't answer your question because that backs me into a corner and forces me to tell the truth about what I think.
And I'd like to run for president in 2020.
Which is, they're not really interested in the Dreamers.
No.
They're interested in only one thing. Again, political power. Hey, like he said, well, we would take it if standing alone. Oh, great.
Sure.
If you completely capitulate and curl into the fetal position and do what we want, I think we'll accept that.
So I agree with everything you're saying. this is what they want. This is exactly what they want, and California's going to do it first.
Under new California law, people will be allowed to register to vote, and it'll happen actually automatically when they obtain or renew their driver's license.
There you go.
As leftist politicians import voters, they still don't seem to understand that they're actually dangers when this happens. And the latest
So she just goes on to talk about
That was Laura Ingraham. She's very smart.
Yeah.
But so here's the thing. And again, for all of the claims that Donald Trump is his know-nothing doofus, he's outmaneuvering them again on this immigration issue, because I can guarantee you that when he gives the State of the Union, what he is going to say, in fact, I mean, just knowing how he is, Mr. Brass Knuckles, and what anyone should say if they're a GOP president is say, hey, listen, I would actually situate a number of these children in the audience saying, listen, you know what? I proposed to Mr. Schumer and his entire caucus. I want 2 million of you to be able to come here and become citizens immediately. Mm-hmm. It's on the table. But see that guy over there, Cory Booker, who's weeping into his shirt for your plight? They don't want to do it.
Doesn't like that.
They don't want to do it. Like, oh, and by the way, you know, Mr. Booker is talking about, you know, this is 19th century technology. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't have trebuchets launching immigrants over a wall. We should have 21st century special technology. And did he specify what he was talking about?
No, he did not.
If you ask Cory Booker, are you in favor of E-Verify, sir? Well, let me finish my propaganda. I'm not going to be back
chain
into
migration.
Your corner. Yeah, no, no. What about the lottery system? Do you favor, by the way, Cory, I've heard that you greatly admire sophisticated countries without a First Amendment, like, I don't know, Canada. Eh? Canada has a merit-based immigration system, Mr. Booker. Do you support merit-based immigration like our friends to the north? I'm not going to let you ask me those questions, because then I have to tell the truth about what I think, and so I'm going to continue to filibuster and not answer. They are not interested in the Dreamers.
No.
They are interested in only achieving a political victory, to your point, so they can garner more voters. That's the only thing that this has ever been about. It's not about compassion for these people. It's about a group that is advantageous for them to, in their belief, regaining political power. That's all it is.
Yeah. Well, I cut that clip. They brought on a Democratic activist who used to be a undersecretary of speaking lies. And he said, now, understand, they have to be legally here, but they only have to say they're legally here. And we know that if you're an illegal immigrant, you've already shown the truth isn't really something you're comfortable with.
Well, and we will make them pinky swear when they say that they're legally here.
Yes, they have to be legal, but we're not asking for any papers. We don't need to see anything, but we're going to automatically make you voters. Now, guess who they're going to vote for, do you think?
Yeah.
The people who made them citizens? Basically. I mean, voting should be reserved for citizens, right?
Right.
It's not so, for anybody who wants it.
Apply that in another context. So if as it relates to gun owners, we're instead of doing the national background check, we're just going to let someone say, listen, I'm not a felon, and I'm entitled to buy a gun.
Yeah,
now, can you pinky swear? Yes, I can. Excellent. There you go. Go pick out your AR-15, sir.
Yes.
Do you think they would agree to that, Chad?
Felons usually are not known for their honesty.
But you know what? The immigrants will all tell the truth.
I'm sure
they will.
Why
wouldn't these other people?
I'm sure they will. Let's play a quick game of spot the hypocrite, or name the hypocrite, or what I found in my memory hole. So
I'm guessing already. Chuck Schumer.
I'm going to look it
up. By the way, I don't know what this is, so we'll see.
Something that is in what you said about being a democratic socialist is a more international
Bernie view.
But I think if you take global poverty that seriously, it leads you to conclusions that in the U.S. are considered out of political bounds. Things like sharply raising the level of immigration we permit, even up to a level of open borders, about sharply increasing
open
the
borders.
Foreign aid.
Open
now, borders.
That's a Koch brothers proposal. I mean, that's a right-wing proposal, which says essentially there is no United States.
But it would make a lot of global poor richer, wouldn't it?
And it'd make everybody in America poor. Then you're doing away with the concept of a nation state.
No, Bernie.
The Koch brothers want open borders, according to Bernie. That was 2007, so he may have been misinformed in 2007.
Well, Bernie was addled even in 2007.
Wow. Okay, here's another one from
Bernie.
No,
wait. Before you go on, The other thing that I love is he's not allowed to say this, and I'm surprised he hasn't been burned at the stake. This is apparently down the memory hole. You can't say this is bad for America when you import all of these unskilled workers.
Oh, wait. There's more.
We need legislation which will improve wages and income in America, lower the poverty rate, and expand the middle class. That's the legislation we need. Unfortunately, the guest worker provisions in this bill, which will bring many hundreds of thousands of lower wage workers into this country, will only make a bad situation.
Someone yank him off the stage.
Will drive down wages even further, not only for low wage.
He's channeling
American
Milton
workers,
Friedman.
But
get
for
him off.
Skilled professionals as well.
Bernie has lost his mind. Take away his communist card immediately.
That was also Bernie in 2007. Now, here's your favorite. And this is...
This has got to be Chuck, right?
Crying Chuck. I gave it away. It's Crying Chuck. Listen.
We must create a system that converts the current flow of primarily low-skilled illegal immigrants into the United States into a more manageable and controlled flow of legal immigrants who can be absorbed by our economy.
Blasphemer!
Let me elaborate.
Please do.
The first of these seven principles is that illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. Until the American people are convinced that we will stop future flows of illegal immigration, we will make no progress on dealing with the millions of illegal immigrants who are here now and on rationalizing our system of legal immigration. That's plain and simple and unavoidable. When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration.
Oh, the humanity!
Which the American people overwhelmingly oppose. If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong, and we have to change it.
That was Chuck Schumer in 2009. Does he sound like a Republican? Build that wall!
What? I mean, this better not get out because the pitchforks and the torches, right? I mean, this is so amazing. They have to bury that tape.
It was probably buried quite. That was at Georgetown Law.
Yeah.
Come on. I mean,
if he said that today, he would literally be stoned to death.
But can you imagine 9 years ago, he's staying upstairs saying all this?
But there's an important point to be made here. We often hear from the media this claim that the Republican Party has lurched into the abyss of extremism, right? They've gone, they would cast out Ronald Reagan. They're so crazy, you know, with the Koch brothers and their open borders,
open borders,
whatever.
It's a right-wing thing.
Take a look at, that is mainstream Democratic thinking on immigration as of 2009. And look at
Barack Obama.
Right, and look at where their party is now.
Uh-huh.
So you want to talk about a lurch, a veering off into the fever swamps of, complete left-wing extremism on an issue. Just replay that tape from Chuck Schumer.
Is that amazing? I mean, could you even imagine Chuck Schumer would have said something like that after he was willing to shut down the government for the Dreamers and DACA?
Right.
And it's unbelievable that 9 years later.
And I guarantee you could find similar statements absolutely from Hillary Clinton and all the other grandees of the Democratic Party, which again shows the conservative position on this really hasn't changed much.
No.
Okay, conservatives have always said, illegal immigration, not good. We don't really want undocumented workers. We don't like sanctuary cities. By the way, we understand that when you import unskilled workers by the millions, that impacts American jobs. Mm-hmm. People that don't assimilate can't really succeed here. And in fact, many of them aren't interested in following our laws. It's also a security threat because we can't vet all of them. This has always been the conservative position. That is essentially the conservative position on one of these issues, and that's being mouthed by one of the leaders of the Democratic Party. Yes.
Bernie and Chuck.
Well, Bernie's, I mean, I don't know what you call him.
Hey, he almost won the nomination. It wouldn't have been rigged against him.
And I think they're going to run him again.
It just boggles my mind when I listen to that. I thought, you got to be kidding me. These guys are advocating the Republican view of things 9 or 10 years ago.
And if the GOP was smart in the midterms, they would put that clip into a
campaign ad. Oh, yeah.
Say, listen, don't take Donald Trump's word for it, how sensible this is. Listen to Chucky.
Yeah. He's the guy you look up to. He's your minority leader. Give me a break, you know? So if you couldn't identify that with Bernie Sanders and Chuck Schumer, so just so you have both both senators in the United States Senate at the time they said those things, and still today, senators in the United States.
It's a much different world today, Chad.
Well, yeah, because now they can bash Donald Trump. Anything he says is wrong.
Right.
Forget that
well,
I said it.
And not only that, because truly, the extremist social justice wing of their party now precludes anyone from saying that. You will be burned at the stake.
You can't say that.
If you say that, you will be cast out into the outer darkness.
You'll have to become a Republican.
You're a bigot. And I mean, I was joking, but no. I mean, you will be cast
as, you're right.
And demonized as a racist, xenophobe, unperson for saying what Chuck Schumer said 9 years ago.
Yep. So let me remind people, we have a call in line, 717-739-5432, 717-739-5432. I'm looking to all the Liberty grads out there who want to take issue with Tony about Jerry Falwell Jr. I'm looking at anybody who says open borders are a good thing and they're a Koch brothers invention somehow. I don't understand that. But
it's too fiendish for us to understand, Chad. There's so many layers.
Apparently,
to their
the Koch brothers are just
evil plot.
Are just evil,
right?
And whatever policy
it's
we
like
don't
Trump.
Like is evil, and
right.
We call it the Koch brothers plot. They're going to spend too much money to evil plans,
even though
it's their
again,
evil plan here.
The best part about this. This insanity as it relates to the Koch brothers is that they're not even conservatives.
I know.
They're basically libertarians. They're pro-LGBT rights.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys do not line up down the line on
the
conservative principles.
No.
And they're, again, they are possibly the most philanthropic people, I mean, maybe neck and neck with Bill Gates, in the country in terms of the billions with a B. Billions that they have donated to hospitals and charities or whatever. But no, they're Satan. They want open borders. I mean, it's amazing.
It fascinates me every time. So we love your comments. Please keep them coming. We appreciate them. That's all I got tonight, Tony. You got anything?
Wait, the only thing we should end on, because we already said this.
Oh.
Have you changed your Super Bowl? Is your Super Bowl analysis still in play?
Who did I say
before? I don't even remember. I think we both said the Patriots.
I think we both said the Patriots.
You know what? I'm going to change because I've been so successful so far.
Well, I'm thinking about changing.
I'm going to change.
Honestly.
I think the Eagles are going to win.
We picked the division winner or the AFC-NFC championship winners last time, and I almost said the Eagles, but I wasn't sure. I wasn't comfortable. I was happy to see the Jaguars make a game of it, and then they became the Jaguars and decided not to win the game
right.
when they had it in their shot. I do not like the Patriots. I'm very on record on that. I think the Patriots are vulnerable. I don't know if Nick Foles is the man to teach them their vulnerability. But I also didn't think Blake Bortles was the man to teach them their vulnerability. So what do I know?
I'm not sure that this defense of the Patriots
exists.
Can well, no, it's not that. I mean, they're okay. You know, they're mediocre.
There's 11 guys on the field at one time, yes.
But I don't think they can prevent Nick Foles from doing exactly what they did in the NFC Championship game, meaning Peterson getting him into places where he can be in rhythm, make his first read, throw the ball. They're not making him stand in the pocket and go through multiple progressions and then wait to, because that's when things start to break down for him. I don't think the Patriots can scheme that. You need personnel, okay?
Yes.
I don't think they have the personnel to prevent the Eagles from running that same type of offense.
Agreed.
And I think Nick Foles can make those throws. He can make those throws all day long.
I think he can.
I think this game comes because I think the Eagles are actually better than the Patriots on both sides of the ball in terms of their lines. The Eagles' defensive line is better,
agreed.
And the Eagles' offensive line is better, even without Jason Peters, which is unreal.
It's hard to believe.
They obviously have Tom Brady. Tom Brady and Nick Foles is a bit of a mismatch. However, we said this before, you know, I said and predicted that the Jags were going to get stomped. And although I think I did in one of our shows add the caveat that if there's one guy that has demonstrated he knows how to beat Bill Belichick, it's Tom Coughlin.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you beat the Patriots is with a front four that can generate pressure on Brady without having to blitz.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do that, and that's what those two Giants teams did in the Super Bowl,
and
they were
the
after him, and
the
Jags did that for most of the game, you can hang with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Eagles are across the board a better team than the Jags. I think Nick Foles is as good, if not a little bit better, than Blake Bortles. I understand that Foles is a backup. Blake Bortles is not a very good quarterback. Now, he played well. He deserves credit. He actually played very well in that game.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people use him as a pinata,
yeah.
But he's not that good.
No.
And
no.
The Patriots still allowed him to throw for whatever.
You think Foles is a better quarterback than Bortles?
Yes, I do.
I think he can
be. I think Foles has more arm talent than Bortles. Meaning, Foles, if he has, now again, if he's in rhythm and has time, is a much better thrower of the football than Blake Bortles.
Fair enough.
He is. So if Nick Foles doesn't have a complete breakdown, or Bill Belichick can't scheme up some ingenious, befuddling defense, and I don't think he can, because this is about timing. Yeah. Can you disrupt them before he's going to his first read? I don't know. Maybe they can, but the Patriots' defense has not really looked that good. I think the Eagles are going to be able to score on them, and I think they get enough pressure on Brady to disrupt him enough. And by the way, it's key whether Gronk is playing. Mm-hmm. Huge. If he's playing, and if he's playing at 100%, Gronk changes their team.
Well, he played the first half of the AFC Championship game, and it didn't seem to matter.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's not even about, oh, well, you know, Gronk only has two receptions or something. His mere presence on the field
changes the defense.
Completely changes how you can defend them.
But they're going to have seven defenders out in most schemes, because those four can rush. Those four can get pressure. And that's unusual for most teams. The Steelers could not get pressure with four. They needed five and six and sometimes blitz.
And that's death against
And it is. Once you do that, you left a lot of holes. If they can have seven guys in defense in a dime package or nickel package, it's going to make it hard. That doesn't mean Gronk's not going to get any catches if he is playing. But it's going to make it a whole lot harder to get him wide open down the middle, standing there waiting for a 40-yard pass. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Brady, and Brady does not do well under pressure. Most quarterbacks don't, but he especially does not.
Well, okay, when you mean under pressure, meaning like from the pocket.
Yes.
Not like in a game situation.
No, not a game pressure, but in the pocket.
No, absolutely.
When you knock him in the
teeth. Up the middle,
yep.
A guy like, I mean, Brady is a classic pocket passer. So anyone like that.
I'm not saying he can't.
The worst thing for them is pressure up the middle, so they can't step into their throws.
Right.
So, absolutely.
And I think the
Eagles' defensive line is the best part of their team.
Now, I looked at some stats yesterday. Both teams were 13-3 this year. Okay, that's fine. The Eagles scored one less point and gave up one less point than the Patriots this year in the regular season. I don't know what that means.
Well, and again, remember, how many games did Nick Foles play? Four? Wentz.
Four. Now so those Wentz. I agree.
The Eagles would have scored more points if Wentz had still played. So I think the Eagles would be ahead of them. Again, Tom Brady is going to – we'll see whether Tom Brady is sort of the great sort of equalizer here. Because if you go position by position, unit by unit, the Eagles are better.
Yeah.
The Eagles have a better defensive line.
Yeah.
The Eagles have, in my view, a better overall defense. They have a better offensive line. They arguably have – if Gronk plays, the Patriots probably have better skill position players by a little bit in terms of wideouts and tight ends, but not by much.
Yeah.
Alshon Jeffrey is a huge pickup for them. Aguilar has been very good. So Brady is going to, if they're going to win, it's going to be because Brady plays out of his mind and he carves them up and, you know, throws for 370 yards and four touchdowns, and they just march down the field with their usual passing attack. I think the Eagles can do enough to stymie them, and I think, you know, Foles can play well enough to win.
I'm going to pick 24-23 Eagles, and that is predicated on Doug Peterson not having an Andy Reid meltdown moment where I forget what I'm supposed to do and continue to put defense on
Peterson
the field.
Peterson doesn't seem to have the Andy Reid 2-minute drill debacle gene in him.
Just keep putting pressure on the quarterback and you win. Step back and go into a prevent defense, you prevent yourself
and the
from
other
winning.
Thing, well, that's the other thing I like about Peterson is that he does not seem right now to be a guy that turtles up and plays not to lose. He was letting Foles, you know, throw the ball, stretch the field.
Sure.
We're going to take shots.
Yeah.
And that's what they're going to have to do against the Patriots as
well. And against that Patriots defense, they can do that.
They've
shown that they are not a great defense time and time again. So you're picking Eagles now?
Right. So that means, unfortunately, the Eagles are doomed and will be slaughtered.
I'm picking Eagles, too, and that's probably part of I don't want the Patriots to win a seventh Super Bowl, or sixth Super Bowl, sorry.
Yes.
But we'll see. And I'd like for Tom Brady to say, you know what, I've had a good career, let's walk away. I know I could play till I'm 50. I know it, you know it, but I'm going to just walk away and enjoy
my
life.
He's not walking away.
Okay.
He's not walking away.
Then I want Bill Belichick to say, you know what, I architect this team and nobody's giving me enough credit, I'm out of here.
Yeah, but where would he go? I mean, you mean just retire?
I don't think he retires.
Where's he going to go? Well, I mean, why would you go from Mount Olympus? There is, you know, first of all, if they win the Super Bowl, look, both of these guys are driven by they're pathological. In many ways, they've got that Jordan gene. We're going to keep grinding. I don't really care. Immediately after the win, we're going to celebrate this for 1 millisecond. Now it's on to next season. We must win again.
So
they're about making a legacy that nobody is going to touch.
So if the York family and John Lynch say, hey, would you like to come to San Francisco?
No.
We know you like Garoppolo.
No. I mean, because here's the thing. What does Belichick have? 5 more years, realistically?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? And again, I don't get the sense that there is. I know there was this recent article about, you know, there was some tension between Brady and his goofy life coach, herbalist, plyometrics guy or whatever he is, Guerrero, and all that stuff. But I don't get the sense that there's a level of dysfunction in that organization that's going to cause it to implode. And by the way, both of those guys are so maniacally disciplined about what they do that they can – that stuff, even if it's going on around the edges, when it's time to focus on winning, that all goes out the door. So I actually think that both of them – I think Belichick stays on and they try to win 7, 8, 9. They're going for – you know, they're going to etch themselves to the point where there's going to be no argument whatsoever. None. I don't really think there is one now. You know, I mean, with Belichick's record with that team, when you look at, you know, the number of Super Bowls, this is their, what, 8th Super Bowl? Mm-hmm. He's been in, of the 8, I think this will be their 6th together.
It's the 8 with Brady. They were in 2-1.
Right, that's my point. Brady, the organization, yeah. The Patriots organization, 10. They got demolished by the Buddy Ryan 46 defense with the Bears.
That wasn't a game.
Right, and then I think, did they lose to the Packers? They lost to Favre and the Packers,
they did.
Right?
96.
That's pre-Belichick. So, but, you know, Belichick wants, when he's done, he wants to be, I'm in 10 Super Bowls.
It wasn't pre-Belichick. He was a defensive coordinator.
Right, but he wasn't the head coach.
Okay,
right, he wasn't the head coach. Right. He wasn't responsible for the team. So, yeah, I think both of those guys, they're staying on. Kraft will keep paying them and see how many they can crank out, how many Super Bowls.
Okay, here's my rampant speculation. Rampant speculation.
Rampant speculation?
Belichick says, I'm the boss. I've done everything. Kraft, shut up. You made me trade somebody I didn't want to trade. Brady, get your guru out of here. I'm sick of this. I'm out of here. I go to Cleveland. Can't be any worse. Go to Cleveland. I get Garoppolo because he's done it in March. His contract is up. Sign him in Cleveland, say, I want ownership. He gets 10 or 15% ownership, and he makes Cleveland what he always wanted it to be when he was there.
Yeah, I could see that if it was 10 years ago.
Maybe.
But it's too late, and it's Cleveland. So
rampant speculation. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Cleveland curse.
It is.
And he's already been there. He's already been there, done that.
But he didn't do well.
No, that's true. That's true.
And he calls Saban and say, hey, I'll
make
you assistant
head
coach.
Nick?
Nick's
going to leave Alabama and become his assistant? No. Maybe they can co-coach.
Co-coach. I'll be the offensive. You'll be the defense, even though I don't know offense.
We don't even have a head coach.
We don't need a head coach. I'll make you my coach in waiting. As soon as I retire, boom, you're the coach, and I'm the GM.
No. You know? Nick Saban's going for 10 national championships, and Bill Belichick's going for 10 Super Bowls.
He's not getting 10 Super Bowls.
He might get 10 Super Bowl appearances.
He might get 10 appearances, and he's not going to get 10 Super Bowls. I don't think he's going to be there long enough to get 10.
Well, they might not win this year.
They need five more.
They might get stuck on 5.
They might get stuck on 5, and they were for a long time stuck on 3.
Yep.
So I don't see him getting 5 more wins in the Super Bowl. It could happen.
So again, now that we've convinced ourselves the Eagles will win, the Eagles are
toast.
They are toast.
If you're an Eagles fan, I'm sorry. Yes. We picked them.
Very, very bad. Very, very bad juju.
That's all I got, Tony. How about you?
That is it.
All right.
We've
exhausted the quiver
all
of everything we've got.
We've gone beyond.
Above and beyond, I think.
Or below and beyond, either way.
It depends on how you view our show. If you don't like it, it's below. If you like it, it's above. So we'll talk to you next time. I'm Chad.
I'm Tony.
Good night.
This has been a Hannah Tree production.